The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Thank you all for joining us for another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast. Joining us for this Hot Take Tuesday episode is Terry Cushman out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Terry, how are you doing tonight? And where can the fans find you on Twitter?
I am ready to respond to some hot takes. And there's going to be some good dialogue tonight because we agree and disagree on some of them. So that'll be fun. But I can be found at Cushman MLB. I post borderline inappropriate stuff. So if you don't like that stuff, just go to the Bastards account, which is all baseball. And that's at Bastards_Boston. And then on Facebook, if you're a Facebook only person, Terry Talks Sox is that account. We're on Instagram. We're on YouTube. Sometimes I even tinker with TikTok, but I haven't done that in a little while. I keep telling myself I'm going to get back to it, but we'll see. I think that one's also Terry Talk Sox.
Come hang out. Come interact. Come give us your hot takes. We'd certainly like to interact with them. Also joining us on the episode tonight is Gabby Blanchard out of Port St. John, Florida. Gabby, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you on Twitter?
I'm doing well, Cody. Thank you. You guys can find me on Twitter or X at GabrielleB82477. Odd name, but Twitter won't let me change it. So that's what I get.
All righty. The fans can find me on Twitter /X at TheCodyPaulson. Come yell at me for my bad takes as well. We're not all perfect, but let's get right into it. Terry, what is your hot take for this Tuesday?
I keep forgetting that I am leading off. Normally, Charlie's the leadoff guy. But my hot take comes from a gentleman named Steve Hunt. And I like to creep their profile a little bit and shout out where they're from. His profile is blank, so I guess we won't go there with him, but we appreciate his submission. He says, Tanner Houck will be your American League starter in the All-Star game. Now, a few months ago, I'm just happy if he's holding down a rotation spot. I mean, it was sounding like he's going to be your fourth or fifth starter. There was even a decent-sized faction of the fan base that wasn't even convinced he was a starter. They're like, no, put him in the bullpen. And not only has he held it down, he is the ace of this staff. And some people might point to Crawford's ERA being a little bit lower, but, you know, Crawford has kind of some jittery innings, as we've covered, and Houck, for the most part, has kept it together, and he's gone through the lineup the second and third time, overcoming. He's basically beating the allegations from years past. I like that saying. You used it a few episodes ago, Cody. I think you were talking about maybe Yoshida or something, beating the allegations. And that's what Tanner Houck has done. And let's just go through some of the numbers real quick. In terms of ERA league-wide, Houck is fifth overall. And this is the entire league. If you want to go American League, he would be third with only Crawford ahead of him. I think Crawford's going to sink. Not necessarily drastically, but I think a month from now, Houck will be solidly above Crawford. But at the moment in the American League, only Crawford and Berríos are above him. And then there's a few National League guys, Jordan Hicks, Ranger Suarez, who's having a phenomenal year. He's been Mr. Postseason for the Phillies, but never great in the regular season, but he's finally putting it together. Anyway, back to Hauk. As far as strikeouts go, Hauk is seventh in MLB with 41 strikeouts on the season. Tyler Glasnow is doing his normal stuff. That dude's a strikeout machine, much like Chris Sale was in his prime. Zach Wheeler, if I didn't say it, Glasnow has 53 strikeouts, so 12 more than Hauk. Wheeler is second with 46. But if you want to go American League only guys, the only two guys ahead of him in terms of strikeouts is Logan Gilbert and Luis Castillo. So two Mariners guys ahead of him. And it's a bold take, but I think it's within reach. I think Tanner Hauk is within reach of all those guys. And unlike Gilbert, unlike Castillo, and even guys like Glasnow and Zach Wheeler, Tanner Hauk is a fun interview. The more the league gets to know Tanner Hauk, the more attention is going to be paid to him, the more coverage he's going to get. He did a sit down with Nesson, the studio guys. So Tom Caron, I think Jonathan Papelbon was on the set at the time, maybe even Jim Rice. And they asked Hauk if he was superstitious. That was my favorite question. And he's like, no, he goes, nothing bothers me out there. I don't let weird stuff bother me. And he referenced another teammate's superstitions and how they just brought that up to Tanner. And Tanner's like, well, hope that works out for you. And I just like the candidness of Hauk. And I've always been a fan of his. And, I am a little surprised he's been as dominant as he's been. But I've never questioned, whether or not he was going to have a successful career in MLB, because I figured at a minimum he would probably be an elite reliever. But having said that, I was still holding out for at least one more season that he could put it together, perhaps with a new pitching coach. And that's exactly what happened. And I want to reference this last thing before I toss it over to Gabby. Nobody in 2016 saw Rick Porcello winning a Cy Young, even as late as June into the season. It was completely unforeseen. So because of that, I think anything is possible. And to me, it's just whether or not Tanner can stay durable. That's the only box he has left to check off, in my opinion. And we can't really check that box off until August or September. So for now, I'm enjoying it, and we'll see what happens.
Gabby, what are your thoughts?
I have been a Tanner Hauk supporter through and through since the beginning, but had you asked me last year if I saw him as elite as he is now this year, I would say, nope, didn't see that coming. I think he's doing a phenomenal job on the mound. He's got great control. I think whatever the kinks were that him and Andrew Bailey worked out together, I think they've really, come a long way together. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he continues on this season. Piggybacking off of what Terry said, I think the trick is to see if he can stay durable and stay off of the IL, because, like a lot of other people that we're seeing at this point in the season, there are a lot of injuries and whatnot. And I would just hate to see something like that happen to Tanner, but I feel like at some point it's probably inevitable. Just hopefully it's later rather than sooner.
I think we're all collectively knocking on wood for that. You all made some great points about Tanner, right? When he first came up, everybody was like, oh my gosh, he's basically the righty Chris Sale, right? And they would do kind of those shadow throws. They'd have them both throwing on the mound at the same time with the overlay and the arm angles, the elbows. It all looked very similar. And, the first time through the lineup, the second time through the lineup, it was, 40 or 50 pitches, a bunch of punch outs, but a bunch of walks, right? And then that third time through the lineup, they were starting to hit him pretty hard. And Jerry, like you mentioned, he was an elite level reliever. He was a closer for us for a little while there. in some of those weird seasons, but this is definitely a guy that, for all intent and purposes, has figured it out, right? You know, you mentioned that he has an ERA that's a little bit higher than Cutter Crawford's, but the outings don't look the same. You know, I would say Houck looks like he's in a lot more control. He's able to go out there and attack hitters, and he's able to keep them, you know, kind of off balance, weak contact. You know, Cutter goes about his outings very effectively as well, but, you know, it isn't necessarily with that same dominant fashion. And, you know, there's a lot of Tanner Houck chat kind of in the mentions here, and deservingly so. The guy has been nothing short of spectacular, and he would be a great storyline if he's able to kind of keep up these numbers, because you're seeing the low ERA, you're seeing the low whip, you're seeing the high strikeouts, and that's the exact type of player that they like to kick off for the Midsummer Classic, the type of player that they want to have to be the top billing as the starting pitcher for the All-Star game. You know, he's taken all of it in stride. He's kept his, you know, demeanor very even keeled. You know, that's what's allowed him to bounce back from, you know, some unlucky bounces in his starts, or, you know, when he had to play the closer role as well. It's a mentality of a goldfish that's allowed him to be successful. And I would not be surprised at all, you know, if he's able to sustain this trajectory, to see him start the AL All-Star game. Back to you, Terry.
Impressively, how many home runs do you think Tanner Houck has given up?
I'm going to say one, but I'm not even confident.
This year? Or?
Yeah.
I'm going to say none.
He has given up one. However, Cutter Crawford, surprisingly, has not given up a home run. So those guys have been holding it down. I'm not going to scroll down. Bayo's given up at least, I want to say, a few. I know Oakland hit him pretty good. But man, I don't know how sustainable this is. Like I said, I think Crawford will slip a little bit. If his season ends with his ERA in the threes, I'm good with that. That's above and beyond what I thought he would do. And, you know, with Houck, quietly, I think he could be a top of the rotation guy. And I guarantee you, you know, if the Red Sox do fall out of it, or if they're at 500 and it's looking the same as the last 2 years, the phone's going to be blowing up for Houck and whether or not he's available. I don't think he will be under any circumstances, but teams are still going to try.
He better not be available, to say the least. Gabby, what do you have for your hot take today?
So my hot take comes from a Johnny Fontaine at Johnny Fontaine 1. And his comment was, Andrew Bailey's pitching program of increased breaking pitches is causing injuries. Now, Johnny, I can see why you would say something like that. However, there has been an increased amount of injuries across the board. So unless Andrew Bailey is coaching every single pitcher in MLB, I don't think that is the case.
Terry.
I'm sorry, I just spaced it there. I was dealing with a hate tweet. My bad. So Johnny is our most frequent guest on here, so I appreciate his continued involvement. He and I are political opposites, so we do play patty cakes on that, but we're strong allies when it comes to all things baseball. But as far as the pitching program goes, it bears watching. I mean, I'm not ready to say right now Andrew Bailey is breaking our pitchers. I did throw a tweet out there last week. I think it was on the same day Bayo went out with the lat problem, which is more of a shoulder thing than a arm thing. And it's too early to tell, but, you know, Giolito, his numbers were ticking up, so I don't think he showed up to camp as damaged goods. I mean, he was a mess from a performance standpoint, But the metrics, as far as his elbow were in early spring training, they were trending upward. His changeup had a little bit more velocity on it. His slider had a little bit more velocity on it. His fastball was only at like 94 miles an hour, but he just didn't make it far enough to, you know, to be ramped up enough to get back to 96, 97. But he blew his elbow out on this program, and Pivetta seems to be coming back more sooner than later. He was throwing a simulated game or throwing batting practice, one or the other. But he's in the later stages of his rehab, and they said he'll get at least one rehab start, presumably in Worcester. If they happen to be away, it could happen in Portland. But he'll be back soon. So I'm not ready to say it's definitely Andrew Bailey, but I'm not willing to say it's definitely not Andrew Bailey at this point.
It seemed like serendipitous timing for me, right? You know, you look at a guy like Giolito, who had a pretty large clean bill of health. You know, the one thing we could count on him for was innings. Boom, season ending elbow injury, right? And then you look at a player like Pivetta, who has also had some elbow discomfort. This is a guy that has been redlining, you know, since he got moved to the bullpen last year, right? And then, you know, they moved him to the bullpen, then they made him a starter again. He came out of the bullpen to do his starts because that seemingly worked well for his psyche. And they said that he came into spring training fully ramped up, right? So that means he was probably doing, you know, his offseason program to the nth degree. And you can't blame the guy. He is nothing if not an intense competitor. But when, you know, the season started and they started mentioning how many, you know, the increased percentage of off-speed pitches they were throwing, the first thing that kind of sprung up in my mind was like, oh, that's not going to be good for this, you know, the sustainability of this staff long-term. But then again, you know, I'm a bum on the couch watching way too much baseball, and they're getting paid to do what they do, and they definitely know more than I do. So you got to trust in the program. You got to trust in the coaches, and, you know, it's not like through the course of Andrew Bailey's coaching career, he leaves, you know, just a morgue of pitchers' elbows that are just broken down and never the same. So, you know, while it's coincidental, you know, while there is a lot of, I guess, tombstones at the moment kind of tied to this pitching program, I think it is a little bit premature to say that he is the one solely responsible for the damage to the current staff, unfortunately. Anything else that you guys would like to add on the Andrew Bailey hot take?
I think I'm good for now. I think the pitch clock is a problem, though, too. And just this week,
I think that's a much bigger issue.
Wade Miley went down. I don't think Snell's again was elbow related, but at least a few guys went down, and they're looking at MRIs again. And I'm not saying get rid of the pitch clock, but instead of 15 seconds, maybe it has to be 20. And at least do it for now, and, you know, look at the data, you know, 3 months from now, and let's see what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about coincidentals, how many injuries have occurred since we implemented the pitch clock? You know, I would rather look at that information versus, oh, how many people have gone down since Andrew Bailey came to Boston. You know, I mean, you've got other big wig starters like Garrett Cole, who's down, right? Blake Snell, you said you already touched on him, but like there's more injuries than just in Boston.
Well, look at those two Florida teams. You know, the Rays lost like 3/5 of their rotation last year to Tommy John. The Marlins, Jesus Luzardo from the Marlins, he was one that went down, and I think he's going to have imaging. I don't think anything's been confirmed on him yet, but Alcantara is out with Tommy John. I think they lost one of their young prospects that was I don't know if he debuted last year or if he was going to this year, but it's just, I don't know how sustainable. I mean, what's next spring going to look like? Who are we going to lose? I mean, we lost personally, Giolito, I mean, hopefully, Bayo's never had Tommy John, by the way. That makes me nervous for Bayo. And he did have a forearm problem last year and luckily bounced back pretty quick. He only missed, what, 5 or 6 weeks, I think. But yeah, so with Snell, it's a left adductor strain. Is that a shoulder?
I think you have multiple adductors throughout the body. It's like small ancillary muscles that kind of help keep things connected and in place, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Clearly I'm a truck driver and not a doctor. So
I also could be wrong and am not a doctor either.
Yeah.
Just out there. it's a great point to bring up the pitch clock, right? I think the initial idea of a pitch clock was tremendous, right? It brought the game, you know, to a much more, I guess, just steady pace of action. But to go from 20 to 15 or, you know, 18 to 15 when there's a batter on or a runner on base, these are, you know, overmanaging, for lack of better terms, right? And the MLB is doing their own internal investigation into the injuries related to the pitch clock. And it very much feels like the NFL's own investigation into, you know, does full contact football lead to head injuries? And it's like, all right, guys, you're protecting the product. You're not necessarily protecting the players, which is a real bummer. But Gabby, I believe you had your hand up. Was there something else that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I just wanted to add in, you know, kind of sidestepping a little bit. How would you recommend combating this injury issue? You know, if it's not adjusting the time clock, like, do we add, you know, more guys into the rotation and make it a longer span between, you know, days that they're pitching? You know, do we make them do less innings? I mean, what is the solution here if not adjusting the pitch clock?
I think we start to see something like we see in the minor leagues, to where it's, you can throw a certain amount of pitches in a certain amount of days, right? Like, you have hard pitch caps. It's no longer, hey, this guy's got something special going on. We're not talking about it. He's in the eighth. We're going to let him ride 120, 140 pitches, which, you know, I don't think we'll ever see that ever again. You know, a guy trying to take a no-no into the ninth and he's 140 pitches deep. I mean, if you get to 100 pitches at this point, it's almost like a unicorn sighting.
Well,
Terry, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look at Bayo. I mean, he went 107 in his second to last start and then 96 in what ended up being his last start before going on the injured list. So it's just one of those things you're like, eh, you know, should we be messing with that? But hopefully pitching staffs will get smarter. And I did look at, going back to Bailey here for a second, it seems like when pitchers are chasing velocity, and that's the term they use, if they're chasing that, it seems like for sure they blow out their elbows after a little while. A few years ago, I did read that sliders are rough on elbows, but there's less data on that now. Like, nobody's talking about that anymore. So hopefully the Red Sox are on to something despite the injuries, and perhaps it's just a coincidence and these off-speed pitches are going to, you know, lead to better health and keep guys off the injured list. I don't know. It's so early right now. That's the frustrating thing. It could be or it couldn't be.
I mean, these guys that are chasing velocity, it's 100% effort 100% of the time, right? And there's no workout regimen or workout plan that ever says you have to hit 100% max effort on every single rep or every single, you know, exercise that you're doing. And that's what these guys are, you know, doing on the mound. And there's no way the body can sustain that, right? You have guys throwing 103, 105 now, which is just, you know, a crazy amount of strain to be putting on the elbow and, you know, the whole pitching mechanism.
The Astros had that Forrest Whitley kid in their pipeline. And I forgot to, he might have been called up as like a reliever. Don't quote me on that. But a few years ago during the winter, he was posting Instagram videos of him throwing like 106 or 107. But in order for him to do it, he wasn't pitching conventionally. Like, it wouldn't have been legal on the mound to wind up and deliver it the way that he did. But he was doing it just to say, ha ha, look at me. And I'm kind of wincing like, man, you're, what are you doing, man? You're going to blow your elbow out. And he still hasn't really done much at the major league level, if anything.
There was that kid from Tennessee a couple of years ago that was consistently throwing 105 on the gun off the mound. And it was nuts. And like control too. Like, it wasn't like, you know, Wild Thing Vaughn from Major League where he's throwing it, you know, through the netting. It was a sight to see. I don't remember where he ended up getting drafted, but you know, for sure he got picked up in the majors.
Well, let's see.
For the next hot take, what we have here is from James, who is at Wingman4567. His hot take is, this team is like watching last year on repeat and expecting a different result. And, you know, I'm all for the saying of the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And I got to say, as somebody that watched a lot of this team last year and has watched a lot of this team this year, it definitely at least feels different. You know, the records might not look super different, but the statistics kind of do, right? The pitching staff, which is a sore thumb last year, the starting rotation has completely been flipped on its head. Last year, the bullpen was extremely solid. It was kind of our wheelhouse, our strength. This year, I wouldn't necessarily say that one's flipped. It's still a bonus, and we're starting to get kind of more contribution, more evenly balanced contribution. And something that I think was brought up a big part from last year to this year was this team's willingness to compete, this team's willingness to fight, to scrap, to just be in the mix, be in the games and not roll over and die, which I think we saw this team do a decent bit last year. This team fights, and, you know, if they lose a game, they come back, they come out swinging, right? You know, this team hasn't lost a lot of series. I think, you know, it's what, Baltimore and a couple to the Guardians. But for the most part, you know, they're either splitting or winning 2 out of 3 or sweeping. You know, we had a long discussion, will this team be at 500 by the end of April? And both Gary and I said we didn't see it. Charlie was the only one that said they would be above 500 at the end of April. And guess what? They're going to be at 500, or they're going to be above 500 at the end of April, regardless if they win on Tuesday or not. And, you know, we gotta take our lumps because we didn't see it. You know, we were kind of licking our wounds from last year, not really believing in this team, didn't really, you know, see it. You know, kind of needed to see it to believe it, excuse me. And they're kind of proving it, you know, by hook or by crook. It's a different person that's, you know, contributing each game, whether it be the rotation, whether it be the offense. You know, sometimes you get both of them to go together, like the middle game of the Cubs series. But while this overall outcome might not be the same, I would say that this team is definitely very different, right? We're not necessarily veteran laden. We're not expecting guys to turn back the clock and contribute. We're investing in the youth. We're investing in the prospects. We're giving them the time and the chance to learn to grow at the hardest level. And, you know, this is going to pay dividends down the road, not only in this season, but future seasons to come. So while it might not necessarily be that 92, 93, whatever division winning kind of team or wild card winning team, I think you can hang your hat on a lot of positives to be taken out of this season.
So I feel like the trajectory is very similar. Now, we took a different path to get here. It's been mostly pitching with a very streaky offense. And, you know, last year it was kind of the opposite of that. I mean, Kluber was getting shelled and Sale got off to a rough start. And, you know, so in terms of the trajectory, I still don't see us finishing the season at or above 500. The month of April wasn't a tough month. I mean, you had the Angels a couple of times. The Pirates looked okay on paper, but I think we kind of exposed them. They're not the team that they appear to be. And the one divisional opponent we faced, we got swept. The Orioles swept us. And you look at the month of, you know, May here, we've got basically the Giants right away. The Twins probably will be tough. That game is in Minnesota. You got the Braves for two. the Nationals are very scrappy this year, and I think they're going to be at or around 500, and I think they're going to be contenders probably next year going forward. They're going to be tough. You got the Rays twice in May. You got the Brewers. You got the Tigers, who are playing very good baseball. You got another three-game set against the Orioles, this time in Camden Yards. So for me to start buying into this team as, you know, as not the same team as last year, like the hot take says, I got to see where we're at July 1st. If we're above 500 and we're healthier and perhaps Casas is closer to coming back, I think we'll have a, I mean, if he's, you know, if his workouts are intense by July 1st, that probably means rehab's coming, rehab games and whatnot. Then perhaps I'll start buying in, but June looks tough as well. I mean, you got the Yankees once, you got the Tigers again, you got the Braves again, you got the Blue Jays twice. The Padres are playing okay at the moment. Typically they fall off. You got the Reds in there. So May and June are going to tell us a lot about who we are. And but for now, I'm still not a subscriber. I still question the sustainability. Injuries have been a big problem for the rotation. I don't know if the Chris Wells and the Winkowskis are going to hold up, and we'll see. But
I guess I hang my hat on the thought that, you know, the path to success, or the things, the variables that we can talk about with this team are far more encompassing than what we could talk about last year, right? Last year was like, okay, well, if Sale, you know, doesn't have a weird injury, and, you know, Whitlock stays healthy and Turner continues to hit, Devers does this, we had like four or five different scenarios in which this team could be successful. Maybe we'd be cooking with something. But, you know, this year we have a laundry list of opportunities, right? You know, you have the prospects coming up that could be contributors. You have, you know, things that we can do or things that we can hope for that actually have the opportunity to break right, versus like, okay, you know, you're trying to beat the undefeated Father Time. That was last year's edition of the Boston Red Sox, right? And Turner did it 100%. He absolutely had an amazing season that I don't think any of us would have expected in his age 37 or 38 or whatever it was. But for the rest of them, it didn't really pan out that way, right? Like Kluber, that's definitely an L. Sale didn't really get it done, as much as it hurts us to say that, because, you know, when he's spinning it the right way, boy, it's fun to watch. But, you know, it is, I guess, more feasible for us to say that, like, Costas can come back healthy and contribute, right? Rafaela, Valdez, Grissom, these guys that are coming up making contributions at the major league level for the first time could actually do that and sustain that versus getting hot for a short stretch. But, you know, I'm on my soapbox over here as the optimist, as I often am. So I should hop off and kick it over to Gabby. What are your thoughts, Gabby?
I don't know. I've really been enjoying listening to you guys go tit for tat over here, because you both have made a lot of really good points. I'm kind of leaning more towards the optimism here, because this is not the same team as last year. We have a lot of different components working out for us this year that did not last year. And I feel like at this point, we have every reason in the book to be well below 500 for an average, and we're not. You know, we've been painfully stricken with injury after injury, and our guys that are still healthy are rallying and still coming out on top, which has been incredible to see. You know, every time, I feel like every day there's a new tweet that says, oh, so-and-so is going on the IL. And it's like, great, now what are we going to do? But they're still playing and the vibes are still there. And I feel like this team really does well when the vibes are there. And when the vibes are not there, you do see glimpses of last year's team. So I think as long as everybody can keep the vibes up, they will continue to push forward and do well. And I also think that as we start getting people back, you know, we're only going to get better. So
hopefully those reinforcements are in fact coming. But, you know, it is dare I say, for the first time in the last couple of years, a potentially fun time to be a Red Sox fan, right? We have things on the horizon to look forward to at the very least.
You can't say You can't say that. You're going to jinx it. I'm superstitious. Perhaps. You can't say that, Cody. You better knock fair on enough. Some wood.
Always am. Fingers crossed. Terry, do you have any other thoughts or things that you would like to add?
I'm just still a pessimist with the pitching, the health aspect. Like, if we mentioned in the last show, if Justin Slayton can continue to be a revelation and move up to a rotation spot and really hold that down, that would probably excite me a little bit. And you got to probably develop one more. I don't know if maybe Richard Fitz, we got him from the Verdugo trade. Maybe he'll be up next year. I need to see some long-term stability with this pitching staff before I'm like, okay, we're close. We're close to being able to really compete for the division again. And until that happens, I just can't get there.
And look, that's totally fair. And hand up, I absolutely agree with you, right? This is, on horseshoe and hand grenades or whatever that saying is, right? But, much like football is built from the trenches, baseball is built from the rotation, right? And until you have depth, until you have 3-4 kind of bona fide starters, it's really hard to see the vision for a long playoff run or, a deep postseason push. And at this moment in time, the Red Sox absolutely don't have that. Things have to break the right way. We need to see these guys be able to do it over the course of 162 games, over the course of 30 plus starts, and, potentially even more, right? Because this is a rotation that, for the most part, hasn't pitched above 150 innings for any of them. I think, Pivetta is the only guy that's done it. Bayo maybe has come close, but we don't have that in the arms at the moment. So it is a very fair point to have, obvious caution in terms of the optimism. All righty. Well, that'll wrap it for us here today. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great day and take care.